Beis Tammuz, Friday the 8th of July, Rabbi Alan Kimchi, themes from the Parsha. Five themes or so.
Good morning, Rabbi Isai. Always a pleasure to be here. Nice to see you all here. Big yesher kev to the organizers of the Torah Way, most remarkable Kiddush Hashem. And always a pleasure to come to this base of Medrash, especially as it's the closest one to my house. Less than 100 yards away from my house, they built a beautiful mokum Torah such as this. What could be nicer? I'd like to try and see how much I can manage in half an hour. Several different, very beautiful themes in Parshas Korach, which Chazal really looked at very closely. I'd like to try and start. It's not often that you get to see in the very, very first word of the Parsha, you get so many levels of Havana in Chazal. Parshas Korach, Vayikach Korach, Ben-Yitzhar Ben-Kos Ben-Levi. What is Vayikach? It's very unusual to start a sentence with vayikach. Vayikach, to take, is a verb which usually takes an object. In other words, what do you take? You take something. For those people who remember the years of grammar in school, there are transitive verbs and intransitive verbs, right? So an intransitive verb is a verb that doesn't need an object, like he said, he walked. That's fine, that makes sense. But to say he took, the question is, he took what? What did he take? Vayikach Korach, what does he take? There's no object here in the sentence, and therefore Chazal need to dig deeper into the meaning of the pasuk to try and understand what is the meaning of the very first word in the parasha, to take. And I'm just going to, in 3 or 4 minutes, give you my five favorite answers to this question. The first answer is Rashi's answer, which is a bit unusual one. Rashi follows Targum Unculus and says Vayikach means lokach es atzmoi, he took himself. In other words, he took himself aside in order to be divisive in Klal Yisrael, in order to challenge and to foment dispute and machlokes. So that's the meaning of Vayikach, meaning he's taking himself. That's Rashi's Peirush following the Targum. The second pshat, which also Rashi touches on, which is also in the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam, Vayikach means, in Loshon HaKodesh, Vayikach doesn't only mean to take in the sense of physically grabbing hold of an object, but Yikach also means to convince somebody. Kach es Aaron, Kach es Yeshua. When it says take somebody, it doesn't mean to physically grab hold of them, it means convince them. In fact, the Torah several times uses the word Vayikach to refer to marriage, where a man the end of Chayei Sarah, Vayikach es Rivka. Vayikach es Rivka doesn't mean he physically grabbed hold of her, it means that Yitzchak took her as a wife, so Lakachas can mean to convince. So Vayikach Korach Ben-Yitzhar Ben-Kos Ben-Levi, who did he convince? He convinced the whole list of people, Dothan Vaviron and the 250 people. This was, Vayikach means he entered into a sort of a lobbying, what we would call today a lobbying enterprise, to convince his followers to follow him into this madness of a machlekes against Moshe Rabbeinu. And the third perish is Vayikach Korach Ben-Yitzhar Ben-Kos Ben-Levi. I think it's a very interesting imaginative perish here of the Malbim, who says that Vayikach means, what did he take? He took, as what does the apostle continue to say? Ben-Yitzhar Ben-Kos Ben-Levi, he took his yichus. In other words, he took his yichus and he became obsessed with his yichus. That is the issue here. He felt that somebody with my yichus, am I getting the covered which I'm deserving? And he was, and this became an obsession with him, so that he was sure that he hadn't received the honor due to him, given that he was such a choshev yid. And in every generation there are people like that who are so dazzled by their own yichus, they can't get over themselves. They can't get over the fact that they are so miyuchus, and therefore everybody should be kerem mishtachavim to them, and therefore Korach represents for us such a person, says the Malbim, Vayikach Korach, he took his status, and he made out of it something more than it really was. Rabbeinu Bachai, I think this was quite well known, goes along the lines of the Medrash, that Vayikach, what did he take? The object of this sentence is the previous parsha. The previous parsha is Tzitzis and Tcheles. And that is the Medrash of Vayikach Kairach. He took the Tzitzis and he made out of Tzitzis, he constructed a talis shekuloi Tcheles, a talis completely made out of Tcheles, as is well known, we learned already in Cheder, that he made out of that a challenge to Moshe Rabbeinu, ki kol ha'om kulam kadoshim v'soicham Hashem, that the talit shekuloi tcheles was a moshul of kol ha'om kulam kadoshim. That a talit made completely of tcheles is a nation who all stood at Har Sinai, that all heard the Dvar Hashem, why do we need you? So this was, so the Vayikach refers to the previous posuk of Tzitzis. This is the fourth perush. And the fifth one I heard from Balei Musa. Always a good idea to bring in some Balei Musa. They always have got a bit of a different angle on things. That Vayikach actually here is not so much a verb as an adjective. In other words, Vayikach describes Korach. What this world is full of givers and takers. Vayikach Korach. Korach was a taker and not a giver. In other words, Korach had a lot to give. First of all, according to Chazal, he was immensely wealthy. I don't know where in the text of the Torah they got that remez from, but Chazal had a maseiros, Teresha Baal Peh, that he was immensely wealthy, right? In Yiddish, you speak about as rich as Korach, right? I don't know where there is a remez. I'm interested to hear from anybody where there is a remez in the Torah that he was, see?
It's called
a chushon. Okay, kol rechushon can be said about you and me as well, kol rechushon. Just some people got more rechushon, less rechush. But that he was such a gevir. Okay, but there was Chazal had a maseira, there was a maseira, Teresha Baal Peh, that Korach was immensely, immensely wealthy. And so he had a lot to give, both in terms of chesed and in terms of ruchnius as well. He was not only of the most prestigious part of Shevet Levi, he was of the most prestigious element in Shevet Levi of Bnei Kahas, Rav Lochem Bnei Levi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, according to Chazal, he was Minosei Ha'oron. He was one of the people who carried the Aron HaKodesh. There was no greater covered in Bnei Levi than actually carrying the Aron HaKodesh, about which Chazal say that Ha'oron Noisei as nice of. In other words, he was being lifted and carried by the Aron HaKodesh. So he was a man on tremendous levels of Kedusha and Ruach HaKodesh, and nevertheless, his ego and his obsession with his own covered, and what was he? He was a Vayikach. He was a taker. He was always interested in asking the question, what's in it for me? And that's Vayikach. Vayikach describes the mensch, describes what sort of person he was, not a giver, but a taker. So here you have five short perushim on what Vayikach means. Moving on to the second Dvar Torah for today, which comes from the Be'er Yosef. The Be'er Yosef, one of our favorite Meforashim, Rabbi Yosef Salant of the previous century. Rov in Yerushalayim, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Shehapu V'Yevorach. So Rashi famously asks the question, Korach shepikeach hoya. Korach was a wise man, and as we said before, wealthy and powerful and elevated. Ma ro'o l'shtus ze? What motivated him? Rashi, Chazal call it a shtus. Why was it a shtus? Of all the people to take on. And the Machlekes, Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Makkas and Kriyas Yamsuf and Har Sinai and the Mon and everything, to take on Moshe Rabbeinu, you had to be a bit deranged. You couldn't be, nobody who was completely thinking even for a moment straight would take on a Machlekes frontally, head to head with Moshe Rabbeinu. Ma ro'o l'shtus ze. I think it's an amazing nusach that of Chazal. Rashi brings it down in Perek to Zion, Pasuk Zion. Rashi brings down this. So he says that he had a Ruach HaKodesh. What was his Ruach HaKodesh? He saw that he would be the ancestor of some Gedolei Yisrael, including Shmuel HaNavi. Morning, Shmuel HaNavi. So he thought to himself, such a tremendous zechus I'm going to have, children of Shmuel HaNavi. It must be that I'm right to demand greater status and greater prestige, and therefore he's right in his, that he rationalized to himself based on his Ruach HaKodesh. Says the Be'er Yosef, a very beautiful insight. You see from here that at every madrega that a person is at, there is a nisoyan for this person. You shouldn't think when someone gets to a level of Ruach HaKodesh and becomes a person who is carrying the Aron HaKodesh and noses, nosob, you shouldn't think that then he doesn't have a nisoyan of to do Averis. Everybody at a certain level has, and sometimes forget, sometimes the Ruach HaKodesh of a person doesn't have the correct middos, he doesn't have the correct middos for it, the Ruach HaKodesh can be a michshol for him, can actually trip him up. And this is an example of Korach. Korach was a man of such great stature that he had the Ruach HaKodesh, and yet what he failed to see was, as we see later on in Parshas Pinchas, the Torah tells us, Uvnei Korach loy mesu. Incidentally, it's interesting to note, Bnei Korach loy mesu. So Chazal say Bnei Korach didn't die, so in the very last second, they pulled back. So I saw once a beautiful Peirush. Why is it that on Rosh Hashanah before Tkiyas Shefer, what do we say just before Tkiyas Shefer? A Matzeach Livnei Korach Mizmar. Why Dafka Bnei Korach here 1 second before Tkiyas Shefer? Because they represent the idea of doing tshuva in the 11th hour. In the very, very last, says now we're going to blow Shefer in 10 seconds, right? If you're going to do tshuva, now's the moment. Who were the people who did that? Bnei Korach. So Bnei Korach did tshuva in the very, very last second. La'matzeach Bnei Korach mizmor. Then we can blow the shofar and invite the mishpat, the din Torah, to come upon us, because everyone's done tshuva because Bnei Korach have inspired us. Anyway, I call upon him. The Be'er Yosef, interestingly, makes a connection between this story and the Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud, which tells us of a remarkable conversation between Chizkiyo HaMelech and Yeshayo HaNovi. It's one of the most beautiful interactions that we find in Chazal, spelling out a conversation based on Pesukim, both in Sefer Melachim and in Sefer Yeshaya, that Yeshaya HaNovi and Chizkiyo HaMelech knew each other very well. Right? So Chizkiyo HaMelech, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yeshaya HaNovi, go to Chizkiyo HaMelech and tell him, Meis Ato Velo Tichya, you're going to die. And not only are you going to die, you're going to be punished by the Habba. So he goes and he tells him the message. Not a very welcome message. He goes, Chizkiyo HaMelech was a great tzaddik. Chizkiyo HaMelech was one of the great tzaddikim in Sefer Melachim, right? So he asks him, why? What's happened? So he says, because you never got married, you didn't have children. You've done all the mitzvahs in the Torah, but you didn't get married and have children, so therefore you're going to be punished for that. Says Yeshua to him, why Taka didn't you get married? You're probably the most eligible bachelor in Klal Yisrael, right? The king of Israel, why didn't he find for himself a wife? Forget, he found the kings of Israel had multiple wives, and he didn't have a wife. Why is that? So he says, I had a Ruach HaKodesh, that my son would be a Rasha. Right? And indeed we know that his son was Menashe HaMelech, who was a terrible Rasha. So I had a Ruach HaKodesh, my son would be a Rasha, and therefore I decided not to have children. So Yeshaya says to him, "Behade kofshe derachmana lo malach." In other words, it's not your business. We don't own our children, right? We can bring our children into the world, and then they have their own bechira. You've got a mitzvah to have puravu, to have children into this world. Once they come into this world, they've got to decide their own future. We can point them in the right direction, but more than that, we can't do. Behade kofshe derachmana lo malach. You've got to have children. If you don't have children, So Chizkiyo HaMelech, Brachos Daf Yud, it's beautiful, you have a chance to have a look at it. Chizkiyo turns around to Yeshaya HaMelech and says, okay, I want to do tshuva. You, the Navi, have given me Musa, I want to do tshuva. In fact, I've got a very good idea. You've got a daughter. You, Yeshaya HaNavi, have got a daughter. So let's make a nice dynastic marriage, right? The daughter of Yeshaya HaNavi with the Melech Yisrael. Right? Sounds like a good shidduch to me. I mean, I'm not a professional shadchan, you understand, but it sounds all right. It sounds like a good, on paper, sounds good. So Yeshaya says, it's too late. It's too late. Kwa nigzera gezera, you're going to die, you're a dead man. And therefore, the shidduch is off. Shidduch is off. He gave it the thumbs down. Yeshaya HaNavi was not willing to marry his daughter to the Melech Yisrael because he had a nevuah that he would die. So Chizkiyo HaMelech says to him, go away, I'm going to do tshuva, I've got a Kabbalah from David HaMelech, that tshuva in the very last second helps, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will makabal my tshuva, and indeed that's what happens. He lives another 15 years, he has a child, Menashe, and indeed the Menashe is a great Rasha. Says the Be'er Yosef, if you see there as well, that Chizkiyo HaMelech was on a madrega of having a Ruach HaKodesh, to know what sort of children he's going to have, to see the future. But that was a nisayon for him, that Ruach HaKodesh. And he was nichshal by his Ruach HaKodesh. Just like Korach was nichshal by his Ruach HaKodesh. So similarly, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, you see that even on the highest levels of Kedusha and Ruach HaKodesh, the Ruach HaKodesh itself still needs the person to be able to overcome his own yetzer, his own ego, and his own obsessions in order to be able to be an Oved Hashem. This, I think, is a very beautiful insight of the Be'er Yosef. Let's move on now to point number three that I want to deal with this morning, if I still have time. It's very hard in half an hour to really deal with deeper issues. But this next subject is a very fascinating question that bothered me for a few years. It's an iyun in Divrei Chazal. So it starts off like this. Now there is a Gemara, which I also think is reasonably well known, in Baba Basra, Daf Ayin Dalad, which speaks about a whole list of stories of Rabba Bar Bar Chana met a traveler who told him all sorts of different things. And this is a very complex and interesting Medrash Chazal. And one of them is that he takes him into the desert, and he shows him the place where Korach was swallowed up. And he says, you can see the smoke coming up from the fire of Gehenna, where they're burning. And if you listen carefully, what can you hear? They're crying out. That's a Medrash Chazal. Now this story, Rabbi Bar Chana, is the Amoraim, right? It's an Amoira. Amoira was about 2,000 years after the event of Korach. So he's still there. He's still there, burning in Gehenna, 2,000 years later, after the event. That's what the Gemara says. There he is. The question is, we have a Kabbalah, and the Gemara says, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Dalad, is the original Makor, of Bro Mazakeav. In other words, that what later generations do are Mazake, parents and the ancestors. And that's the whole concept of what we generally colloquially call Ilui Neshama, that you do a mitzvah for Ilui Neshama. Right, that any mitzvah that a descendant does, the ancestors are credited with the zechus of that mitzvah. Right? And on that basis we say Kaddish for a year, all the minhogim of Avelus and Kaddish and Ilui Neshama and the mitzvahs one does for Ilui Neshama and the learning Mishnayos and the what doesn't one do for Ilui Neshama every time one does Yizkor, every time one does the concept of Ilui Neshama means that indeed after the Neshama goes to the Olam HaEmes, the Neshama itself can't gain any more zechuyos and has to suffer the consequence of any Averus. But if the Neshama has left behind in this world some descendants, the credits of those descendants, and the logic behind it is relatively straightforward. I sort of show, but Kluger spells out, he says, it's straightforward, he says, that the ancestors are, if you like, in modern terms, shareholders, if you like. It's only because of the ancestors that the children exist. And therefore, when the children do mitzvahs, he's a shutuf. The ancestors are all shutfim in the mitzvahs that every one of us does. All our ancestors are shutfim, because without them we wouldn't be here. And therefore, when we do mitzvahs, it credits their zechuyos, right? Freitzach HaKasha, Korach had immense amount of tzaddikim, including Shmuel HaNavi, about whom Chazal say, Moshe Aaron b'chayinu, Shmuel b'chayinu shemoi, that he was shokul k'negin Moshe Aaron. Shmuel HaNavi was a person of the highest possible level, and the amount of zechuyos he must have had was infinite. And so why is Korach still 2,000 years later suffering? That's a kasha that I had. Now, when I say a kasha, I must be careful by the word kasha. I mean, my Rebbe, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zechatzal Libracha, never allowed us to say that we've got a kasha on Chazal. You're not allowed to say you've got a kasha. What you're allowed to say is you have a tzorich iyun on Chazal. Tzorich iyun. Right? We weren't allowed to say we've got a kasha on Rashi, or a kasha on Tosfos, or a kasha on the Rambam. We weren't allowed to say we've got a kasha. He says, trust me, you haven't got a kasha on the Rambam. What you've got is a tzorich iyun. In other words, there's something you haven't understood completely. Think about it again. Think about it in 5 years' time. You'll find a solution. You haven't got any kashas. What we have is a tzorichiyun. So I've got a tzorichiyun. So this is a tzorichiyun. On this Gemara, it's actually not tzorichiyun on the Pasuk. It's a tzorichiyun on Medrashe Chazal. Why would Chazal tell us this story, Rabbi Bar Chana? given the fact that Barom Zake Av and so many mitzvahs done le'ilui nishmosei, that he should be well away from any Einish 2,000 years later. Right? So that I think, is a stark akasha. So you could say it's a medrash, that the Gemara in Boa Basra is a medrash, and some of the Mefarshim there, the Vilna Gaon, has got a whole arichus about all the symbolic meaning of this story, that it's not meant to be taken literally. Maybe it's not meant to be taken literally. Maybe it means that every door there are kairachs. There are ways of darshaning midrashim metaphorically. One could give a teres like that, but it's a bit doichak. Until I saw two people who asked and answered this question, and I'd like to share with you the question and the answer, which I saw in some of the Achronim. The first one is the Shem Mishmuel. It's always a great simcha when you've got a question and you can't answer the question, and I put it in that little box in my brain of unanswered questions. Bit of a full box, I must be honest with you. It's a full box. And then suddenly you find some of the Gedolei Yisrael asking a question, and then you realize it's not a klotz kasha after all. It's actually a genuine question. So the Shem Mishmuel asks the question. Why did the Zechus of Korach's offspring not save him from an Einesh Be'olam Ha'emes? So the Shem Mishmuel says, there's a Mishnah in Yumod of Peiches about Yom Kippur, about Tshuva, where it says, Ha'ime Echte Ba'oshuv, Ein Yom Kippur Mechapa. What does that mean? That means Yom Kippur is Mechapa Ol our Aveiros, brings us atonement for our Aveiros. But if a person, before he does a mitzvah, says, you know what, before he does an Aveira, a person before he does an Aveira, he thinks to himself, I know it's an Aveira, and I shouldn't really be doing it, but you know what, in a couple of months' time is Yom Kippur, I'll do the Aveira, I'll have a nice geschmack out of the Aveira, and then a couple of months' time I'll have Yom Kippur and I'll wipe it out. If he used, the Mishnah says, what's the svara behind that, says the Shem Mishmuel? The svara is poshut. That if you use Yom Kippur as a reason for doing the Aveira, you've abused the Kedusha of Yom Kippur. That you yourself can't benefit any more from the Kedusha of Yom Kippur because you've abused that Kedusha. We need the Kedusha of Yom Kippur in order to get Kapara. That if a person uses it as a reason for an Aveira, then he's short-circuited the system of Tshuva. He can't use it anymore. And that's Pshat in the Mishnah. Says the Shem Mishmuel, that since he put his trust in the zechus of his offspring, therefore that zechus can't help him anymore. When he thought about making machlokes with Moshe Rabbeinu or not, he thought to himself, oh, I see in Ruach HaKodesh, I'm going to Shmuel HaNavi and all these Bnei Korach are great tzaddikim, they will save me, right? And therefore I don't need to worry about doing this Aveira. Since that was his rationale for doing the Aveira, because of that, says the Shem Mishmuel from Sokachov, that short-circuited, that zechus, he can't get zechus anymore from his children under those conditions, because he used it as a reason for the Aveira. It's an interesting Londisha Iyun into the Mishnah in Yom Kippur, and I think it's a very interesting, a bit of a deeper perish. That's one person who I saw asking and answering the question. The other sefer that I saw is Reb Eliel Lopian, Zechut Tzad Livracha, who many of you have heard of, Meli Lopian. I still had the zechus to meet him at the end of his life when he was living in Yerushalayim in the late 60s, early 70s. I was in yeshiva at the time, and I met him on a few. He used to come to Daven Meirid and Kol Torah at the time, Meli Lopian, one of the Gedolei Machshava. So there's a sefer called Lev Eliyahu, some of you might have it, in three chalokim, which has got a whole collection of some of his very, very fascinating Divrei Torah, very, very interesting things. So he says here, so he asks this question. He asks this question, how come Korach is suffering thousands of years later when he's had all these great tzaddikim who should have been mezakeh him with an ilui neshama? What's happened? So he says something a little bit frightening, a little bit interesting, but something worth thinking about. So he says as follows. He says, the idea of getting kapara through an ilui neshama from later generations, that's only to do with a person who's done Averus, someone who's been Machal Shabbos, someone who has violated the Torah in various different ways. But if someone is a Kofer, that doesn't help. The Zuchus of Brahma Zakeh, the Brahma Zakeh, the Ilui Neshama, doesn't work with someone who is a Kofer. kefira, and you'll see with Korach, Korach started off simply through jealousy, but actually as you read through the story, it escalates, and the Pasuk says in Tezayin, Pasuk Yudalef, it says, Hanoyadim al Hashem. The Pasuk says about Korach, it's Noyadim al Hashem, that actually they have a kofer in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a kofer in Terem in HaShemayim. So the kfira, issues of emuna and kfira are much worse in this respect than issues of Issur Veheta. Issur Veheta, I often say to people, in questions of Issur Veheta, one can find kulus and chumrus. But in issues of emunas vadeus, one can't find any kulus. You've got to know your emunas vadeus. You've got to know absolutely what emunah is, and stick that and clarify one's emunah in all different aspects of emunah. So half of our emunah is emunah in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but the other half of our emunah is emunah in Torah Min HaShemayim. Emunah in Torah Min HaShemayim is as much part of our emunah as emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Torah Min HaShemayim was what Korach was denying. He was saying that Moshe Rabbeinu said certain things me'atzmai, and that wasn't Min HaShemayim. So because, that's what Rabbi Elopian says, that because he was a kofer, right, that meant that he wasn't able to benefit from the zuchus of his descendants. And I think that's something a little bit of a bit of a frightening idea. Indeed, the Mishnah, Kol Yisrael Yeshleim Chelek Le'olam Haba, which we all know, right? Not many people know the second part of the Mishnah. It's well worth knowing the second half of that Mishnah, Rabbi Yisrael. What's the second half of that Mishnah? The Eile She'ein Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba. Right? We only say in this Mishnah there's good news and bad news, right? The good news is first, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba, She'ein Lehem Kolam Tzadikim. And then the Mishnah continues, But Eile She'ein Lehem Chelek, and there are some people She'ein Lehem Chelek, and who are these people? If you look at the Mishnah in Sanhedrin Daftet, Perek Yud, these people are not the people who be Michal Shabbos, or even Trefus, or be Michal Yom Kippur, whatever. These are apikorsim. They're all people who violated the issue of emunah, who lost their emunah, or who violated their emunah. That emunah lost them olam haba. So it could be that's where Eliel Lopian gets his idea from, that actually the loss of olam haba means that the Brahma Zakya Av doesn't help anymore. Because the person doesn't even have a kesher with Olam Haba, because it's the emunah that gives us the kesher with Olam Haba. Once you're connected to Olam Haba, then you can still be raised in your madrega in Olam Haba. But if you're not connected at all in the beginning because of the kfira, then all the Brom Zakeav, all the Ilim Neshama won't help. And that's indeed why Mitzad Hadin, we don't paskin like this, Lamaisa, the Mitzad Hadin, if somebody, Chas V'Shalom, is an apikeres, an out-and-out apikeres, one doesn't sit shiva for him, there's no hilchas avelus at all for someone like that. We don't paskin like that, because we're melamed zechus, the people, tenek shenishpa, etc. But actually, if you look in the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Gemara, and Moed Kotel, and it's poshut, that someone who is an apikeres, you don't have any avelus, don't do any shiva. All the issues we do normally for Ilu Neshama, we don't do. Why don't we do it? So according to this, we understand completely why we don't do it, because this person is not connected to the Olam Haba, to the Nitzchias, because of his kfira. So kfira is, in that sense, a much worse situation to be in than another. I'll just finish off. I have 2 minutes left. And just in the last 2 minutes, I'll give you a fourth Dvar Torah from the Parasha. A beautiful Pasuk to end up on something very beautiful. The Mate Aaron, the Hine Porach Mate Aaron, by Yotze Perach, by Yotze Tzitz, by Yigmoel Shkedim. Very beautiful. Right? The parasha ends because the parasha is full of death and destruction. So the Torah wants to end up on something more of a positive note, that the Mate Aaron blossomed and had fruit, right? And we find the Taka, the Mate Aaron, so we find that was put, so Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to put it in the Aron, to put it in the Kodesh Kedoshim. It was put there together with the Tzitzenes Mon and the Aron HaKodesh, right? And it remained there forever. In fact, the Gemara in Yuma says that at the end of the Churban Bais Rishon, so that they took the Aron HaKodesh and they found a Geniza for it. They hid it away. So the Aron HaKodesh still exists somewhere, hidden deep down in Yerushalayim. They hid it away, together with its antennas man, and together with the Mate Aaron, says the Gemara, Procheha Ushkedeha. So 1,000 years later, there were still blossoms and buds and fruit on this Mate. That was the Chiddush. Incidentally, the Sivas Shalom explains what was the whole issue of the what was the symbolism of a flowering staff. He says to tell you that Aaron and Shevet Levi, they were, he said, Lahirus Shebnei Levi Mechuborim LaShayrish. Why would a stick flower or not flower if it was planted in, if it had a kesher with a Shayrish? Aaron and Bnei Levi had a Shayrish with the Neshama, with the Olam HaElyon. So they were mechuborim l'sheirish haneshama, so Klal Yisrael, and therefore that chibur made them able to blossom and flourish. What's the symbolism? I'll just finish off in the last minute. What's the symbolism of perach and tzitz and shkedim? So the Kliyaka says that the perachim refers to the children, the infants of the kohenim, and that's why Chazal call them pirchei kahuna. The pirchei kahuna, the pirchim, right? Where does the word pirchim come from? From this week's parasha. Because porach, mate aron, the porachim are the flowers. The flowers haven't developed their potential yet. They're just pretty, they're lovely, they're charming, like little child is. But they have got no teyeles yet. The flower doesn't have any purpose yet of its own. It's just got promise, it's got potential. So that is the pirchei kahuna, these are the children. The tzitz, he says, is the kohen gadol, who wears a tzitz. There's an ambiguity in the word tzitz. It means a bud, but it also means the plate that was on the Kohen Gadol's head, Kodesh Lashem. So he says, from the youngest, from the smallest member of the Kohenah, to the Kohen Gadol, this applies. This Kedusha of Aaron and Bnei Levi applies. And what is the Shkedim? So the Shkedim, so Rashi says, the Shkedim is a symbol of Zerizus. That it means, so Rashi uses it negatively. Rashi says to tell you that ha chelek ala kahuna pronus maheres lovay. That's what Rashi says. Like the shkediyah, the almond tree is the first one to blossom. It's always a symbol of speed, the shkedim. And therefore he says, so Rashi uses it negatively, but the Kliyaka uses it positively. He says the whole mate is talking about the kedusha of Aaron. So the shkedim is a reference to the zerizus of the kohen. That one of the hallmarks of the Kohenim was that all the avodah they did bezrizus, they did with passion, with enthusiasm, and that's the limit of the Mate Aaron. And my time is up, and I wish you all a good Shabbos, and always a pleasure to be here.